Recording has been started. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the Translation and Transliteration of Contact Information PDP Working Group on Thursday, the 21st of August, 2014. On the call today, we have Wanawita Kupdra, Pitanan Korman Patana, Chris Dillon, Howard Lee, Jennifer Chung, Jim Galvin, Wolf Ulrich Nobin, May Swichapim Thurawat, Peter Dernbeck, and Rudy Van Snick. We have apologies from Petter Reinforth, and Anne-Marie Taylor. From staff, we have Julie Headland, Mary Wong, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would also like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Chris.
Thank you very much, Terry. Okay, well, without further ado, let's proceed into agenda point three, and this is just the usual point whether anybody has a change in statement of interest since the last call. Okay. Hearing and seeing nothing in the chat room, I think that means we can proceed. And we are really continuing with what we were doing last week. So we were looking at various themes that had been raised, and there was some amount of discussion about them. And all of this is about a document which I circulated earlier today. In fact, we were still working on the same version of it last week, which is the Translation and Transliteration Draft Recommendations version 6. And so what I'm intending to do is just to continue to work through what seem to be larger themes. And you can see those on the screen in front of you now. So these are the larger themes that we're aware of. There are also quite a few smaller things, you know, some of them very small indeed. And so we can also start to work on those if we have enough time today. But let's just see how things go. So there'll be quite a lot of switching, I think, between the two documents. So it's a list of the themes, and then it's the version 6, really very much like last week. At any point, you're welcome to bring up other things. So if there's a sort of burning theme that you'd like to have added to our list, then please mention that now. It just gives us a bit more time to think about it. Okay. And so the other thing is that when we get as far as actually going through the document, picking up even quite small things, and what I'm hoping may happen is that as we're doing that, people may just spot other things, and that's absolutely fine as well, because often something that you think is quite a small issue, you know, just a sort of some issue over a definition or something like that, actually turns out to be larger. So, you know, we're really expecting that to happen. Anyway, without further ado. And it's good to see that the numbers are getting healthier and healthier, looking at the chat room. Without further ado, let's actually start with our list. And as I was saying, these are the things that we think are larger themes, and some of them we raised last week. And, in fact, I think most of them in some way or another we raised last week, but it's just really continuing with that list. Okay, so one thing that came up it's a sort of general issue over purpose of data and accuracy of data. So there are many conceivable purposes of data, really, in some of the related work, there is the expert working group's final report, for example, has a very long list of purposes. And so really what comes out of that is that You know, for some purposes you need accurate data, and for other purposes possibly you don't really need accurate data. Just one thing I would like to flag up is that we seem to be finding it difficult actually to specify which purposes don't require accurate data. I find that rather interesting. That seems to be where we are with that at the moment. So I think the thing here is that in some ways there is an issue over, you know, whether we should be talking about purpose at all, but I feel, as I've written here, that there is a link with accuracy, so at that point we may need to take it on. Jim, would you like to raise something about this this area?
Thank you, Chris. This is Jim Galvin. I have a question. It would be helpful to me and hopefully others if we could just take a moment to recap how we got into this particular discussion. I mean, I've been thinking about this a little bit more, and I realize that accuracy is important to transformation in general, but I guess I'm not remembering how it is that we got to talking about the purpose of the data from accuracy or from transformation. Could you help to fill in that gap a bit for me?
Yes, I think that the key to it should be I think it's connected with, if my memory is right, it's C3 and O2. I could have got that wrong. Okay, so C3 is the question about what exactly the benefits to the community are of translating or transforming in relation to the costs. So I think part of it's coming out of that question. And then later on, we've got, it's sort of O3 or even O2, but who are the stakeholders? So who is affected and what do they want? So straight away, as soon as you start listing the stakeholders, you know, you've got different purposes there. So I think those are two of the places where that is coming from. It may be coming from somewhere else as well, but at least those two.
Okay, thank you. So if I understand, then I guess, yeah, so what we're saying is as we consider the question of when and where to make a transformation, it's important to understand the purpose of the transformation, which, of course, is closely related to the purpose of the registration data. Would that be fair?
Yes, I think so, yes.
Okay, thank you. That helps.
Okay. Okay, I think maybe perhaps if we just leave that for the time being, we might come back to it later. Anyway, so certainly I think this this is one where the next version may need to add text, or I think just more time may need to be spent on this. Moving on, are there any other comments about that, or shall we move into the next one? That's what I should say. Okay, well, let's have a look at number two. So this was a case where this sort of thing is always rather difficult, because you sort of think of typical cases. So, you know, for example, a Chinese registrant applies for a Chinese name in China, and it's all quite easy in your head to sort of follow what's going on there. But last week we were talking a bit about, you know, what about more difficult cases? So I think there might have been an example along the lines of a Russian applying for a Russian domain, but from a Chinese registrar in China, that sort of a situation, and we were wondering, well, you know, what special issues could this sort of thing raise? So in number two, I've really referred to it as language is not typically supported, so you know, sort of out of the, you know, sort of less likely ones, I suppose. Here, the suggestion is that it's really, it's really a matter of the business analysis that registrars would make a decision which languages they were going to support. So we're thinking about, you know, would the particular Chinese registrar want to support Russian Cyrillic? The only thing that comes out of the data is that if the guidelines that we have suggested here are followed, then the Russian person would probably be inputting data in Russian Cyrillic. Rudy, would you like to flag up something about that?
Yes, thank you, Chris. Rudy, for the transcript. Well, I'm just wondering, why would a Russian registrant use a Chinese platform to register a domain name? I think that if the Russian registrant is able to understand Chinese, I consider that the registration of the domain name would be done in the Chinese platform in the Chinese language. I think that there is also an issue of related to the legal aspects. If a Chinese registrar allows registration of domain names by registrants that are not Chinese, I would consider that I've already seen the Chinese rules would be a difficult point. So I'm wondering if we allow to have translation done in a country where the legislation is very strict, are we not pushing it in a position where it's too far from the reality in itself?
Thank you for that. I think the temptation for this was to do something like, say, okay, so what if you've got Chinese applications happening in the United States? I mean, I suppose that case is more likely to happen than this sort of thing. But I guess the point of this is really that you know, we've got to find out some sort of general rules for this. So actually, we have to think of you know, not just very typical cases, but you know, other cases that could happen, and try and work out if there are sort of general principles. I mean, certainly, I think the point you make about that there may be quite a likelihood that this particular Russian would need to be dealing with a Chinese interface, and you know, similarly in the American case, you might have a Chinese registrant having to deal with English. So that we don't worry about at all. But I think in some ways, by thinking of other similar cases, I think in some ways it's helpful. You're just working out what can reasonably be expected. That's really, you know, that's really what it, you know, what it comes to. And so decisions, you know, obviously there are legal aspects, as you say. There are also you know, just business reasons. So the Chinese registrar may or may not provide a Russian interface. The U.S. registrar may or may not provide a Chinese interface. That's really what it comes to. And that's separate from the language of the data that's being input. So the Russian is inputting data in Russian, and the Chinese person is inputting data in Chinese characters. I'm wondering if that makes it any clearer. Okay, now there are a few comments going on in the chat room, so let's just spend a bit of time to have a look at those. So we've got Jim saying, language is not typically supported in a country. Don't we mean language is not typically supported by the country of the registrar? Sorry, yes we do. Yes, that's just a more accurate way of saying it. And then again, Jim is saying it's really about the registrar, not the country. Not totally sure about that because yes, I mean it's quite because of the legal aspects. I could imagine situations where a registrar could even be bound by different law depending where he or she was operating. So that means the country could be relevant. Jim, would you like to pick that up?
Yes. So thank you, Chris. This is Jim Galvin. Okay, then I think I really am confused. I'm not quite understanding the point here that we're capturing with item two. When I was involved in this discussion last week, because this isn't quite the point that I was trying to bring up then, you know, I was simply focused on the idea that an address information, you know, that I was focused on what the language or script choice would be for the postal contact information that was going to be entered and asking what our consideration was of that. And so I had used an example of English in Japan, but that was morphed in the discussion to, you know, Russian in Japan, which is probably a better sort of example here, or Russian to Chinese. See, I don't really see, because of the point that you're making here about it, it's really a business issue, right? I mean, the registrar is going to have to make its own business decision, and the business decision will, of course, be weighted by whatever legal constraints are present about what they are or aren't going to support in terms of language and script, right?
Yeah.
So the real issue here is taking it a step further into accuracy and then into validation. What really matters is whether you're going to let a Russian registrant come to a Chinese registrar, and if they're going to be entering a Chinese address for the domain name that they're buying, whatever the IDN of the domain name is, the language and script of the domain name is, is that Russian going to enter that Chinese address in Russian or enter it in Chinese? That was my question.
Okay, right. Okay, that case is that, so if he's buying, that's the point. So it's if the TLD is a Chinese TLD, it's whether he has to input in Chinese or whether Russian is fine.
Not quite. I'm not even tying it that way. That is a way to tie things, okay? So let me say that. But that actually is not the example that I'm getting at, okay? You're right. It could be the case that there are restrictions that, given a particular language or script of a TLD, so the TLD itself is in simplified Chinese, wants, you know, all names to be in simplified Chinese, if you will. That's one way to look at it. I'm focused on the fact that I'm a registrant and I have to provide contact information for myself. I'm Russian,
yes,
but I happen to live in China, so I'm going to enter a Chinese address because that's my address. I could be buying any TLD name, whether it's a Chinese one or Russian or something else entirely. But again, I live in China, so the question is, do I enter my Chinese address in Chinese, because after all, I'm in China, or should I be required or optionally have the ability to enter my Chinese address in some other language or script.
So in that case, it would probably be Russian. Yes, that's an interesting issue. I mean, instinctively, one really wants to answer that the data should be input in Chinese, because those data are going to describe that address in the best way. So the best language for a Chinese address is actually Chinese. But in a case like this, that is adding quite a complication, because it may be quite unlikely that the Russian would be able to do that. So there is an issue there.
That's an interesting question. I don't think that would be difficult for the Chinese person, for a Russian person to do that. And I base that on the following. I agree with you first that when you said it seems fairly obvious, intuitively obvious, maybe that's the right way to say it, that if it's a Chinese address, I should enter it in Chinese. I mean, why would I do anything else? And in fact, if you think about it in terms of accuracy and validation, that makes the most sense. Certainly, you could not operationally validate a Chinese address if it was entered in Russian, because you could not expect the Chinese postal system to deliver that address, to deliver any postal object with that address on it.
Yeah.
And then you ask, well, could a registrant enter a Chinese address if they're not Chinese? I would say that they could, based on the fact that at the very least, they must have some printed copy of their address somewhere, and they could always copy and paste it. If I'm going to live in China, then presumably I know what my Chinese address it is, and I must know what it is in Chinese. Otherwise, I'm never going to get any mail, right?
Mm-hmm, yes. I think all of that works fairly happily. And, certainly if the Russian is copying out of the kind of database we're talking about, that would be beautifully labeled, so he would know exactly what he was copying, so we're not worrying about some sort of crazy mistake happening. Because obviously when you're copying data which you don't understand, there is always the possibility that you're copying something which actually means wrong way up or something really crazy. But if it's coming from a database where it's properly tagged and you know what those data are, then that should work. But I think it's a very nice point. Thank you very much. Let me return to the chat room at this point, because I think. Before we do that, Amma is just wanting to ask something. Amma, would you like to pick up something in that?
Well, thanks, Chris. This is Amma. I just wanted to ask whether folks really think this is a puzzle that is within the scope of this PDP. I agree that it could be an issue at some point. It might not be very different than any other person in China who wants to register a domain name in another script that is non-Latin-based, like Cyrillic, for example. Because like Jim said, there probably are practical ways someone who is not a Chinese who is living in China to fill in his address. I'm guessing this person will have to do that for other purposes as well, not just for the sake of registering a domain name. But this PDP, if I'm not mistaken, is specifically required to address translating and transliterating contact information from non-Latin-based script to Latin-based script. So we're not talking about Chinese to Cyrillic here, are we? And although this is something we could spend time trying to work out, I'm not sure if it's necessarily the wisest way for us to spend our time.
Perhaps we should have stayed after all with an English and Chinese example. Maybe that would have been better. But I do think it could be worth adding some aspect of this to the document. But I will think it through and make a decision before the next version anyway. So. One way or the other, it will turn up in version 7. Okay, I would like to just go back and check that we've not missed anything in the chat room. It's been rather busy. I think it's probably just picking up various aspects of this. And Amma wrote something about allowing flexibility for the business models of registrars to decide what language they would like to support. Absolutely. And then agreeing with Jim, saying, I believe it's about the registrar, not the country. Yes, okay. And then another piece. I'm guessing that registrars are well equipped to understand how to operate and maintain ability to serve their desired consumers while maintaining contractual compliance. If they fail to meet market requirements, then that gap may be filled by other or new registrars. Yes, I mean, this is just a sort of business model thing. And Rudy is saying it's helpful anyway. What would stop a Russian registrar from hiring or outsourcing tasks to Chinese speakers or contractors? It's a matter of demand and supply before registrars and registrants. So it's this whole sort of outsourcing issue. So outsourcing work from one language to another or one country to another.
I guess that
aspect is really very much supply and demand, as Amma is writing there. Okay, and Rudy is then saying, to make it a bit more complex, same case except the registrant does not live in China but in Russia. Oh, gosh. Yeah. I think perhaps I'm going to invoke Amr here and say we possibly need to think more just about the sort of English and other ones, not so much between all possible languages. I mean, that also goes back to the document where there is something about the UN mentioning the desirability of sort of English as being a sort of pivot language or that sort of idea. So I think we can legitimately also hold ourselves back to English and then other scripts rather than looking at all possible possibilities. Okay. I think... one general principle that comes through all of this, as we were saying before, is that, if you've got an address in Japan, the best language to represent that address is Japanese. That's what we're really saying. In the case of the Japanese post office, actually, they are very, very used to using English, but still... Even in that case, Japanese is better. If you've got a transliterated Japanese address, you actually can't get that into Japanese because you don't know what characters are used to write the various sounds. It's that sort of thing. Okay. Anything else about number 2, or shall we move down the list? Interesting discussion. Okay, number 3 it is anyway.
Sorry,
Jim, would you like to say something?
Yeah, so I guess I'll come back to my original question that kind of started this. Perhaps it's just me. And if so, we can move on for now, and I'll try and catch up as we go here. But I'm really not quite understanding the point that we're trying to make here with two. I'm sorry, but I'm not following why this is an important theme that requires attention, because it does look to me like it's just a business issue.
Yes, I think probably this is probably just going to become a note saying. I mean, I feel something does need to be there that. Because it is likely that those reading the document will be interested in the support of languages, and I think we probably do need to say that fundamentally, we'll probably make those two points. So one of them is that it is a business thing, so it's actually not something we are going to get particularly involved with beyond saying that it's a business thing. But then make the other point that, when we have this, or actually two other points. So one is that that addresses are best in the local language. And now, wait a minute. And then there is another point which has now skipped my memory. So the addresses are best in the local language. Oh, yes. And the interface of the system as well. So that's, if the decision about what interface the registrar is going to provide, again, that really is up to their business model. That, you know, it's worth just mentioning these things, because otherwise, they're just things that are very, very likely to be questioned. So, I think we can make things clearer by settling that. And it's been quite difficult to argue it through. I mean, particularly because we were trying to argue not just English, non-Roman script, but everything. But I feel what's come out of it is worth putting in there, even if it is just as a note.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful for now.
Yes. I hope I can make that clearer in version 7. Okay. And so that means we can pop down into number 3, and this is something I actually raised last week, but I have a feeling that because fundamentally we are not making transformation mandatory, that seems to affect how binding our recommendations about transformation are. So if it had been mandatory, then we could have made binding recommendations. Because we are saying it should not be mandatory, then that seems perhaps to affect the level to which our recommendations can be binding. This is something I raised last week, and it affects the drafting. That's really why I'm raising it. So, when I wrote the document, I was under the impression that even though we'd said it wasn't mandatory, that actually our recommendations would be quite binding. If that isn't the case, then there may be a few other places in the document that I need to adjust to reflect that. But I'd be obviously quite interested if somebody could help out with this. Jim, would you like to say something?
Yes, thank you, Chris. This is Jim Galvin. This question 3 that you have here, to me, I interpret this as asking about those stakeholders who optionally are deciding for themselves whether or not they're going to transform data. But I want to distinguish that and I guess ask the question, is it your intention to distinguish that from my understanding of the question in our charter, which is, you know, who should bear the burden of transformation if we decide that transformation, you know, should be required? Because I would expect that if we answer that question, those recommendations would be fully binding. There'd be no question about the binding of those recommendations.
Yeah.
And so I just want to make sure that you are asking a distinct question from our charter question with the one that you have here, correct?
Yes. I mean, I think the reason I'm raising this, in some ways it would be much easier if I didn't, but the reason that I'm raising it is that we are, you know, unless there's a major, you know, unless there's a fairly major change to this document, we are saying that transformation should not be mandatory. Now, obviously, and we're also saying, actually quite overtly, that we don't want to discourage stakeholders that do want to do it. So, you know, there may be stakeholders who do that locally or using some other criteria. That's really up to them, and we don't want to discourage that. Now, the reason I'm holding on to this and saying, you know, if people are going to be doing transformation, then there is a benefit to doing it in the same way. So at that point, you know, I think, and also because we've spent a lot of time, you know, talking this through, then I feel quite keen that if we can at least encourage people to do it in the same way, that's really why I am keen not just to let it drop. That if possible, those who transform should use the same approach. Jim, are you wanting to pick up something in that?
Yeah, I was just leaving my hand up for a follow-up, but I have to be honest, I'm now not sure what to ask. I'm not sure I tracked fully what you said, to be honest with you. I guess I really didn't track what you said, but let me not hold things up at the moment. We can move on if no one else has a question, and
the more I think about this, the more I think it's going to be quite difficult to make the sorts of things that we are suggesting, to make that in any way binding. However, I have a desire that the work that we think this is the best way of transforming. We've spent a lot of time doing that. Now, it's not going to be, you know, that transformation will not happen. It won't be mandatory for that to happen, but there will be people doing it. I'm just hoping that we can, save the work that we've done. It is just the thought of everybody transforming in totally different ways is quite a difficult thought. I mean, it's really just trying to encourage a sort of standardization. That's the reasoning behind it. But the more I think about this, the more I think this is going to be difficult. Amur, would you like to pick up something about that?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. This is Amur. My personal answer to question 3 would be that no, we shouldn't make it mandatory. Sure, wouldn't it be a bad idea to encourage it and say that this is the standard we think should be used, and we encourage whatever stakeholder decides to transform contact information using this standard. But again, I think the point I made last week that if the recommendation of this PDP working group is that transformation is not mandatory, then the original contact information provided in whichever language and script will be the authoritative contact information that should adhere to standards and contractual compliance in general and validation and such. But sure, we could encourage a certain standard be used for transformation if a stakeholder decides, but I would say that it would not necessarily be helpful that we make it mandatory for any reason. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. I think that's actually very helpful. The local language is certainly authoritative, and you know that should be rigorously defined. And to try and do something with transformed data is quite an uphill battle. And that is actually another reason for why we're not suggesting that it would be mandatory, because it is just so difficult to get it standard. I mean, it really is a reason against doing it altogether, which is there in the document. So perhaps we are a little closer to answering that one, and perhaps we have to accept that although we've spent a lot of time thinking about this, it is very, very hard, and eventually perhaps to some extent we need to let this go. Okay, unless there's anything else about number three, shall we head down the list into number four? Okay, and I think we might have picked this one up. So the draft was written, presuming that allowing restaurant. Oh, sorry, no, this is a different issue, and it was one that just came up slightly in what Jim was saying earlier. So the draft was written, presuming that allowing registrants optionally to transform data could be an easy way of building up transformed data into the database. However, such optional transformation raises data quality matching and versioning problems. And so, of course, what comes out of this is, do we actually want to actively discourage transformation, or is that going too far? I wonder what people think about that. Instinctively, I think it is going too far personally, but it's quite difficult to argue why it is going too far. So I think possibly we need to have a few more arguments about when a registrant fills in the contact data, whether you're having the Chinese registrant just filling it out in characters, or whether you're encouraging him to put some pinyin into the database as well. And it might almost be worth going back to last week's meeting, because Emily Taylor said some very interesting things about this last week. So, yes, I think that that might be a provisional answer. So, for number four, I will look at last week's minutes, because certainly Emily was picking this up in quite an interesting way. So I think at the moment, probably version 7 is going to be saying something like that there will be an option for putting in transformed data, but perhaps saying something that you know, it, in many ways, it's not very useful because there could be data, sort of clean data problems and various other things. I feel that isn't all of what Emily was saying last week. Jim, would you like to pick up anything there?
Yeah, so this is Jim Galvin. Thank you, Chris. I guess I will just express my bias here on this point for the moment, you know, quite directly, and then I am very interested in continued discussion to see what other, you know, points of view exist and what other people think about this. But in general, you know, I would certainly prefer that we not allow registrants to enter two forms of data, because there is this issue. I mean, I think that if we're going to go down that path, then it is important for us to speak to the issue of matching and versioning, and to have some requirements and such that go with that too. And I am concerned that that adds additional complexities that, at least for the moment, it's not obvious to me what problem we would be solving by having that exist. But I certainly do allow myself to be educated here by continued discussion on this point. So thank you.
Thank you, Jim. I really appreciate that. I mean, I think I can really understand your logic. I feel instinctively that there is a demand out there for data in ASCII or English, but it is really just that. And I think this is almost a challenge to the group. In some ways, it could be it could be a cleaner thing. It could be easier just to say, if you are a Chinese registrant, you put in data in Chinese, that's it. You don't need to be fiddling around with English or transliteration or whatever it's going to be. But I think there needs to be, as you were saying, I think there needs to be more debate about this. I am very sympathetic to what you're saying. It's very logical. It's very clean. But I feel instinctively more than anything that there are probably other opinions out there. They just need to be articulated more. I think that's all it is.
Thank you. And one additional follow-up. I welcome additional discussion and debate because I agree with everything that you're saying. So, like I said, I currently have a bias, but I do want to hear more discussion. The other thing I wanted to clarify, though, is add a caveat to one additional thing that you said, which is if I'm, you know, a Chinese registrant, as a concrete example, you know, I should be allowed to enter data, you know, in Chinese because that's what I am. And my clarification and caveat that I want to keep putting on the table to make sure that we don't forget it and include this in our detailed considerations, and I want to explicitly make a choice here as to which way we go. And so I'll express my bias at the moment, again, leaving the door open for more discussion. It's not that a Chinese registrant should enter their data in Chinese. I think that the Chinese registrant should be able to use the Chinese as their primary language of choice, but, for example, contact information in the form of the postal address, the language for that needs to be relevant to the address that's being entered. So if I'm Chinese and I'm living in Russia or a Russian living in China, I need to enter that address in a language appropriate for the region where the language exists. That's where my bias is at the moment. So, thank you.
Yes, thank you. Yes, that's going back to the earlier discussion. There is also an element here whereby you see. I think it may also be possible, and I'll change country just to make maybe it makes things clearer. So, so for example, if we have a Japanese address, it might be. This is not a very good example, but we'll try and run with it. There is a large road in Tokyo which is called Meiji Dori. Now, I think usually it's not called Meiji Road, but let's just pretend for a moment that it is called Meiji Road. You see, whether that if we've got a, if, imagine we've got an address and we've got a the address is on Meiji Dori somewhere. Now, you see, you could say that as long as we're saying Meiji Dori, whether it is written in characters or whether it's written in transliterated Japanese, that is Japanese, even though it's transliterated. But if there's something major whereby some major element of the address has been probably translated, actually, so it might be the sort of like Krung Tape and Bangkok example, or here we've got Dori becoming road, then actually at that point it becomes English. So I think some people may argue, could even argue like that, that whether in some ways, whether it's the original characters or whether it's a transliterated version, it's actually still Japanese, but it only becomes English, if there is something there which has been translated. Jim, would you like to pick up anything?
Yes. So to add to that, as a principle that I see that covers the example that you're offering there, that's why I use the phrase, I carefully use the phrase that the contact information should be entered in a language or script appropriate for the region in which it's located. It's you're using as a very good example there. I mean, it's easy to say that we're talking about Tokyo, so it seems natural that it should be in Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, in that particular example, there probably are locations that are commonly known in their English form.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Why wouldn't that be allowed?
Mm-hmm.
So the place that you get to is, okay, how do I do validation now? I think that it's validation that drives a part of what becomes valid for the region, what becomes appropriate for the region. Because as long as the address is deliverable, as long as the postal system in that region will deliver it, then however it's entered is appropriate. Of course, now you get into the second order issues of implementation, which is, okay, now I'm a registrar taking this in. Well, how the heck am I supposed to know if English is okay or if it has to be in Japanese or it has to be in something else? And so it gets more complicated as you dig in a bit here. But keeping it back out at a level for this group, I think the issue is if it's supposed to be appropriate for the region, then whatever that is fine. That might be English. It might be Japanese. It might be something else entirely. And all of that should be okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sympathetic to that, generally, but I think that it just ends up being quite complicated. And you see, for example, in the Japanese case, actually, the Japanese Post Office is very used to dealing with addresses in both characters and in English, in fact, and in other countries also. We have a situation where really there are several languages which could be used. I think probably we're talking about exceptions here. The general rule remains that you're much safer using the local language. So, if it's Japan, then let's use Japanese and all the rest of them. There are situations where there may be alternatives, but for me, those feel rather like exceptions. So, there's part of me that wants a sort of general rule saying just generally speaking, use local data. And I don't know whether we need to get as far as making exceptions, because the problem is that I just worry slightly that we'll end up with a list of places where the major, you know, this general rule doesn't apply, and that feels quite quite complicated. There's part of me just wanting to avoid that. So that's why I'm very sympathetic, but I'm not completely agreeing. I think that's what it comes to. Okay. And that, unless there's anything else about number four, that actually brings us to the end of the sort of more major issues. I think because we are nearly at the top of the hour, I won't start up by going through the document, you know, bringing up other things, smaller things. I think it's probably just good to finish with this. So we do have a couple of minutes before we round up. So if anybody would like to make any comments, now is a good time. Otherwise, I think just look forward to dealing with the smaller issues next week, and we'll do that quite slowly, because as I was saying at the beginning of the meeting, I think you know, as you deal with some smaller issues, sometimes you suddenly discover that something small is actually hiding something larger. So, you know, we're sort of prepared for that. And also, I've rather skipped, you know, there is something we were talking about, legacy data, last week. I think we'd more or less finished it. But anyway, do have another look at the document in the light of what we've said this week. And we can still bring up other larger issues. But what I'm intending to do next week is to just go through issues which are not quite as big as the ones we've been discussing this week. Okay. Well, in that case, many, many thanks for another good call. And we'll meet again at the same time next week. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye. That concludes today's conference call. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect.